This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Try This at Home, an MCO-inspired series that looks at new skills or activities to try during this time. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Today, we're going to be talking about something that is particularly pressing in a time when anxieties and boredom feel like they're at an all-time high. And that is, of course, wellness and mindfulness. Specifically, how we can get into a practice of our own and also how movement like yoga can enter the picture. So we're going to have a show in two halves. The first will be focused on yoga and the second on mindfulness itself. If you have any questions on starting a practice in either, you can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. First up, we're going to be talking about yoga. Personally, yoga was something that I just resisted for many, many years, feeling like I was too impatient and clumsy for it. But a friend recommended it when I was having trouble sleeping and back aches. And after the first few practices, something just kind of clicked. So now it's something that I try very hard to make a part of my life, mostly through online classes. Joining me to talk about trying yoga at home, you heard her laugh, is Atilia Harun, co-founder of...
Hi!
Hi, Atilia. Thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me.
So this might be something that's taken for granted. Can you maybe tell us, what is yoga? What does it cover?
I do understand where you're coming from, because I started yoga super late. I started when I turned 30. That was... 16 years ago, so that was sort of like my birthday present to myself, because I was never physical at all. I was never into any sports. The reason why was because I had a weight problem. I was underweight, so I was afraid to go into anything physical. I was afraid to go running, to go swimming, or anything that might help me to lose my weight even more, you know. So I thought, okay, I'm going to try yoga because yoga looks simple. And it looks so zen, and you get to play the music at the end of the class and look super cool and chill. And boy, I was wrong. So I went for my first class. I suffered. I couldn't find my way home. I almost vomited because I wasn't prepared. So the most important thing when it comes to yoga, right, when you want to start your first class, is to actually learn about your breathing. So don't go into your crazy headstands and handstands and split straight away, because I went in thinking that, hey, I can do this because I'm skinny, I'm light, I thought I was flexible, but I was not at all. So it was a shock to my whole body system. And another mistake that I made was I went into an intermediate class. So I was super lost and I didn't know what was going on. So yoga can be pretty intimidating. True?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I also started by going, I think, for the wrong class. And I think when you do that, it really sets the tone for what you think yoga is.
Yeah. So number one, you need to find out the yoga class that you want to attend. It has to be a beginner's class. It has to be basic. When you say basic, you need to go back to your breathing. You have to learn how to breathe properly. Everyone knows how to breathe or else you die, right? But sometimes you don't know whether you're breathing right or wrong. Especially when you're on your mat, you really need to breathe right or else your whole practice will go haywire. That's what happened to me, I think, the first few years, because I wasn't aware of my breath. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what my intention was. Why was I on my mat? I just wanted to do something because all my friends were doing something, you know. So just set your intention, know your breath, and then everything will fall into place. Then your hips and your splits and all that will come like super easy. And then you wake up in the morning, oh my God, I can do this already. I can't believe it. But I'm 40 years old, but why am I doing this now? So those little things that make you feel like, wow, I have actually achieved something. Even though it's small, but for me it's big because it's like a journey, you know?
So what are some of, I guess, the different types of yoga then that might be commonly practiced? Because again, you hear a lot of terms, you know, vinyasa, hatha,
so
all these things.
Many, yeah.
Yeah. What are they?
Well, vinyasa is a flow. That means all your poses are connected with one another and you're using your breath to marry your movements and the way you breathe. So every breath has got a different pose and it's all connected from one another. So it depends on the teacher how they want to make their flow. You know, how they want to choreograph their flow and all that. Usually you start with breathing and then you go into sun salutation where you warm up your body and then you go into some core practices or for arm balance or something like that. And at the end, you close your practice by going into savasana, which is your relaxing pose again. So it's like one whole circle of flow of a practice. But if you do something like hot yoga, you basically do the same thing, but the room is heated. And the goal is to, of course, to detoxify and you lose weight. When I, for me, I personally, I cannot do hot classes because I will lose weight straight away and I don't want that. But some people, I understand they want that, so that will be good for them. So you have to know which practice is good for your body.
And how do you go about discovering that? I mean, is it a matter of trial and error?
For me, yes. But after going through that, I usually tell all my students, you know, you can actually see how stretchy you are, how flexible you are from a simple pose like downward facing dog. So try and do a downward facing dog and see whether you can straighten your legs all the way or not. Then you can see whether your legs are flexible or not. Then you know, okay, I can do more legs, I can do lesser arms, things like that. That is, I think you have to go for your first class with a teacher. And then the teacher will evaluate you and tell you what you should do and what you should be doing. It's very important because that's why I always ask my students before I start a practice whether you have any recent injuries that you want to tell or you want to share or whether you just had a recent operation. All that you have to know. But I believe that you know your body best, so you can just try and see how you feel because it may be different for you, it may be different for me. That's, for instance, I may be practicing for 15 years, but your legs are more flexible than mine, you know, because you were more active in school and maybe anatomically I was born with a very closed back. My back is not as open as yours. So all these things you have to know yourself. And you're right, it's trial and error. Maybe the first few times, do it with a teacher. So it's much better so you won't injure yourself so much, you know?
Mm. And I know that there are some people who treat yoga more like stretches, right? Where they specifically try to just do certain static stretches like downward dog and things like that. Is that something you would recommend or is it good to build a routine
it's
and
really
a practice?
Really good. Okay. So that yoga is called yin yoga, where you go into like, for, let's say, for instance, 1 whole hour, right? There's only 15 poses and you just stay in that one pose for 10 minutes. What it does is, of course, it will stretch you out and you feel so much better, right? But your blood circulation and you will notice if you do yin after a normal practice, like every three days, your normal practice will be so much better. Let's say if you are a runner or if you are a basketball player or any other sports, it's very good for you to do yin practice.
Right now, I mean, you mentioned starting off with a teacher or with classes, but right this second, that's not possible for a lot of people. There are, however, a lot of yoga videos and live yoga classes.
There's also a lot of virtual classes.
Right.
My studio is actually offering virtual classes daily. We have like 3 classes every day now. And you can pick and choose and see which teacher you want to follow. Usually what I do before, I used to just play the videos once and see whether I like the teacher's instructions, I like the tone of her voice, and I like her poses, and I will see how I feel, and then I will try. Like you said, like trial and error.
How does practicing yoga at home on your own differ from attending a class, though?
A lot. Discipline. Like for me, even for me, who's a teacher, I've been teaching for, I can't remember, 6 years. I don't have the discipline to practice at home sometimes on my own. Like 1 hour or one solid practice, I will go to my kitchen, get a drink, you know. But you have to be diligent. You have to push yourself and say, okay, promise 1 whole hour, I'm not going to move from my mat, not going to take my phone. I'm just going to put everything away. And that takes a lot. So you have to be really rajin and really want it. I'm sure a lot of you can do now because you don't have anything anywhere else to go anyway.
Right? No, but you know, that I think that point about discipline is also really important because I find that, for example, if I find certain poses difficult, I might give up earlier when I'm at home than I would if I'm in a class, right? Because I'm just like, I don't really like this. I can't do it. Never mind. I guess the question here is, how can you push yourself while still staying safe when you're by yourself?
I tell you what I do. I know it will sound vain, but I put a camera in front of me and like shoot the whole session, shoot the video. And then let's say if I want to post something later, I want to post something that's good, right? So I don't want to post something of me giving up. So I will always try and stay through, pull through, because I know, okay, the video is watching and I want to have a cool edit later. So I don't know.
I think that's a good tip.
Because you always want to look good on camera, right?
Yeah, so I guess that's a good way to self-incentivize, motivate yourself to do it. Okay, so...
That's my motivation.
So for people who are thinking, I want to start practicing, what do you need to have at home?
Just a mat. Even if you don't have a mat, a floor is fine. Most important thing to have is an open heart, more than anything else. Because for yoga, you don't need any equipment. You just need your body, your mind, your breath, and a flat surface. That's it. If you don't have a mat, get a towel. I used to use this big, you know, those Mickey Mouse towel, the Disneyland towel. Those were, that was my yoga mat because I've got sweaty palms, and that was really, really helping with my sweaty palms. So I didn't even buy a mat when I first started.
And what about props? Things like blocks, bolsters, things like that?
Yeah, but if you don't have a block, you can just use a pillow. Bolsters, yeah, you can just use your any bantal at home you can find. But when I first started, it was just the floor and myself.
And that's all you need?
That's all you need. And a smile.
We spoke earlier about how yoga can be a little bit intimidating. Can we recap again? I guess, what advice would you have for people who are listening and thinking, I can't do handstands, you know, I'm not flexible, I don't want to do
it. That's why now when I post my yoga photos on my social media, it's just of me sitting down or doing downward dog, because I realize a lot of people get intimidated when they say hard poses. It's like circles already. This is not yoga. This is like gymnastics, you know. So, yeah, I totally understand. But yoga is not all that. Yoga is all about being one with yourself and being one with your breath. And you don't have to be inverted to do that. So, yeah, if anyone listening in and feeling intimidated by all that, don't, because they're all showing off, including me sometimes. You know, sometimes when you see handstand photos, it's just a video that they freeze and screenshot. That's all. Because I do that also sometimes. So don't get intimidated. It's just to make things funner.
And okay, so with that said, in closing, if people are thinking about starting a yoga practice right now, how can they start? What words of advice would you have?
First thing is to, if you want to start on your own, I don't know whether that's a good idea or not. But if you don't have a choice, like most of us are stuck at home now, just go to YouTube and get on some of the... Now they have a lot of really good teachers. I went through a few yesterday, like Kino McGregor, this lady named Sadie, or this person named Attilia. I don't know whether you know her or not. You can look up for them on YouTube. And there are a lot of basic beginners flows that they can follow. And they should start with breathing exercises. You just look for Attilia Yoga Show. I think I recorded one couple of years ago. And then there's some stuff on breathing exercises and how to actually start to go into your normal practice. And maybe do some sun salutations, which is super simple and it's a rep of doing the same thing, going from your right to left. It's super easy to follow. You just do that like 5 or 10 times in the morning and you're good. It's basically a total body workout if you do your sun salutation.
Attilia, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We've been speaking today with Attilia Harun, co-founder of the Hippie Hub, on starting a yoga practice. After this, we're going to be talking about mindfulness. Keep it here and try this at home. BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Try This at Home. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Today's show focuses on wellness and fostering a sense of calm. Earlier, we spoke about yoga, and now we're honing in on practicing mindfulness and focusing on the present, particularly in a time when there's a lot of uncertainty about the future. If you're curious about this or you have any questions, you can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining me on the line now is BFM's very own Noel Lim, who is also a mindfulness teacher. Noel, thank you so much for joining us. So this is something that we've talked about in the past. How would you define mindfulness?
Well, the definition of mindfulness, there are three components to it. Staying in the present moment, being kind to yourself, kind to others, kind to the moment that arises for you, and having this non-judgmental sort of attitude. And when I say non-judgmental, meaning like if it's like an unpleasant feeling that arise for you, the idea is not to push it away, but to kind of embrace it and allow it to be part of the human experience. And same with like a pleasant feeling that arises. It's not to get too attached to it and to be able to sort of stay in that middle awareness.
So when we talk about a mindfulness practice then, I guess the question here is, what do we mean? Because from what you said, it's very much a way of life, but people also talk about fostering a practice. So is there a specific way of shaping that?
So when people tend to refer to a mindfulness practice, that would include things like a sitting practice, for example, meditation. It can also be yoga can be a form of mindfulness as well, because as you move, you take a breath, you're really mindful about each movement. That's also a way to express mindfulness. And even when we are writing, sometimes we are really in the moment of writing, right? We are just so with the present, in the present time. So that's also one way to express mindfulness. So mindfulness practices can be quite varied. It can also be meditating to a song, for example. Just listening to the song, listening to every note, being aware of how the music changes, for example. Yeah, so there are many. So that's when we say this is a practice, like we are doing something to cultivate mindfulness. But really, it can be part of daily activities when we are brushing our teeth, when we are driving, or when we are, you know, just spending time with our loved ones.
And can you elaborate a bit more on the relationship, I guess, between mindfulness, movement and stillness? Because, you know, you spoke there about meditation, which usually involves, you know, sitting still, which some people, I think, find challenging, and yoga, which is a constant sort of moving with the breath kind of practice.
So, yes, so both are mindfulness practices. So being still sort of helps us conserve energy. So our mind is more steady in that sense. It's one way, it's a bit like you could say it's an energy-saving practice. So we don't, like, you know, waste a lot of energy moving around unnecessarily. Yoga is, of course, intentional. It's a very intentional bodily movement. And so, yeah, so they are not like on the opposite end, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. It's still cultivating that sense of calmness, that sense of being in the present, knowing what's happening, knowing what are the thoughts that arise in your mind, what are your emotions at that point in time, or even any body sensations. So when we could be sitting and there could be, for example, our stomach could be growling, or that our chest, I mean, the heart could be beating quite wildly. So we are aware of all this that's happening. And it's the same when you're doing yoga, you could be aware of, you know, how your body is interacting with the movement.
What are the usual challenges that you see people facing when it comes to incorporating mindfulness into their lives?
I think the common excuse is no time.
Yeah.
Or rather the common reason, right? I think what underlines that is because when people sit there, our minds are in that, most people's minds are in that driven, doing kind of mode. And it's just the way we have been brought up, how we have been educated. You know, our parents said, you know, study hard or do your homework. You know, it almost feels like for every problem we face in life, there has to be an action-oriented solution to it. And so that's why we tend to cultivate our mind to become quite driven doing. So the idea when we practice mindfulness is to balance being in the being mode, mindful mode, and in that driven doing sort of mode where, you know, we're always constantly striving and striving, especially in our society, right, Asian society. So I think the point here is when people just sit, they get a bit impatient and maybe restless, like, oh, I think I should be getting up, I should be sending that WhatsApp to my boss, I should be writing that email, right? It almost feels like I'm wasting time. But the idea is when we stop for a moment, when we take a pause, and then when we get back to our normal daily life, our daily activity, we could be more productive, we could be more resourced after, you know, a sitting practice or even just doing a yoga movement or even Tai Chi or Pilates. Yeah, so I think that's why people find it, oh, when they say no time, it means I'm not just going to sit there and just waste time. Yeah, I'm sure people can find 10 minutes, right? And then after that, you have 23 hours and 15 minutes to do other things, you know, put on your to-do list. Yeah, so it almost feels a bit strange when people say they have no time. But the point is, most people are busy. I think we have to recognize that. So I think even just starting with a 5-minute practice or a 10-minute practice or even 20 minutes or just setting aside a time where you know it's really your own space. Mindfulness, the practice of it, is really what people say, a radical act of self-care. You know, it's just about that, right? Just giving yourself that space to be, just to be, you know, instead of doing, striving.
Mm. And I do want to talk a little bit more about the benefits, which we'll get to in a second. But when it comes to this idea of no time, right now, that's perhaps changing because people do have time. That's the whole point of that. That's one of the central complaints of staying at home. So what are the challenges, I think, specific to the times we're living in, you know, that might keep us from practicing mindfulness?
So there's a lot of anxiety about the economy. And some people or many people could be thinking, do I still have a job after the MCO is over? Or do I have to take a pay cut? Will I be able to pay my home mortgage? I think there are a lot of questions there. And I think naturally people can easily get anxious. And when people are anxious, it may be even more difficult to sit, to have a sitting practice or to just meditate for 5-10 minutes. For example, our minds may be jumping, like what they say, the monkey mind. Mm. Or we are just feeling really anxious and we just cannot sit still and it's, you know, we feel very restless. So there are a few techniques to work with this. One is to, as best as one can, is to use the breath to focus on that. So if our mind starts to wander, is to just bring our mind back to the breath. And if that's difficult, some people do find it difficult to focus on the breath because the breath is very closely related to our emotions. So if our emotions are, if you're feeling really nervous or anxious, the breath, you know, it might be hard to access the breath in a steady way. So I think what people can do is to then find a space in our body that we feel really stable. And this is what I think a technique that people teach actors. So it's feet on the floor. So maybe giving you a sense of groundedness, just feeling the contact of your feet on the floor. Or what they say, bum on chair, bum on seat, is feeling the contact of your bum against the chair you're sitting on the sofa, because that also could be another point of anchor for you. And I know some of my friends, they like to use an external object to focus on. I have my mala beads. Some people may use a candle, for example, or they may use music as a point of just taking, using an external point of focus. If it's, you know, difficult to access our body because, you know, we're just feeling too nervous or anxious. Yeah, so there are some techniques to work around feeling anxious and uncertain about what's going on.
And you talk there about how practicing mindfulness is a radical act of self-care. So let's talk about that. What are the key benefits? Do you feel them? You know, do you notice them immediately?
So there are various benefits that have been listed and tons of research has been written about it. But I'll speak from my own personal experience. So I tend to be very reactive and I think I still am very reactive, but I am less reactive than in the past. So I can say that from my own personal experience. So I'm a bit, instead of reacting, I'm responding. Yeah, so that's a bit different. Reacting means there's a very knee-jerk reaction, you know, whereas responding is more considered, it's a bit maybe more wise or more productive or more constructive. Yeah, so I think I can speak for myself, that's number one. Number two, I think I tend to now take a bit of I'm less striving. You know, when I look at my to-do list, I'll really look through them. And if I see anything in there that does not move the needle on anything, I won't do it.
Mm.
Yeah, you know, so I've become like that. Last time, my to-do list can take me probably 2 years to finish. But now it's like, no, this is not needed. Nah, you can drop that, you know, forget it, you know, do it next year, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah,
right.
I don't think I'm being lazy and I don't think I'm procrastinating. I'm just trying to be more effective. I'm just wanting to spend time doing things that move the needle now. Mm. And what really personally interests me and what I see where my life, you know, is heading. Yeah. So that's the two things I can say for myself.
And with that said, I think that for you've talked quite a lot about the doing, right? The striving, this idea that a lot of us are geared towards that. And I think a part of that is also looking at the practice of mindfulness through this lens and saying, well, fine, you know, if I'm going to give you 10 minutes, when is it going to work? How is it going to work? How do I know if I'm doing it right? And I guess the question there is that a helpful mindset? And the other thing is, how do you know when you're doing it right?
Yeah, so... okay, maybe I'll start with how do you know if you're doing it right? So, okay, I'll use a sitting practice as an example. And when we sit, people have this idea that a perfect sitting is when our thoughts are so calm our mind are so, our mind is so calm. Our body seems very at peace. And that's fine. I think that's great. But there will be moments where we feel anxious, and which is current situation now. We may feel upset even. And that's also fine, because it's still a practice. And in fact, if anything, that is where the real practice takes place, because this is where we are cultivating the ability to just stay focused. So mindfulness, I know for some people it means going to a particular state, but really I think what we're trying to do is to cultivate that ability to just stay with anything, to stay in a pleasant situation or to stay in a very unpleasant environment or situation. So that's the practice of mindfulness. So if you want to know how we are doing it, so-called right, is to see, do we keep bringing our attention back to the breath? Do we keep bringing our attention back to our point of anchor? And that's what we just need to do in a mindfulness practice. And for some people, they might get transformed very quickly. For some people, it may take ages. But I think if I look back at my own experience, I find that suddenly some things click, suddenly a solution, not necessarily an action-oriented solution, but just an idea or a solution emerges for me that like, oh, okay, yeah, okay, I figured this out now, you know. So it may be 24 hours time you get something, or maybe next week you get something, but I think the idea is not to get even into that striving mode or how you want to meditate, like I must be able to meditate for 3 hours, 4 hours, then I'm the champion meditator. I think that's not the idea. But it's a bit crazy, but of course there are people who do it, and kudos to them. Yeah, I think that is a fantastic experience to be able to sit still for 3 hours. Or even 7 hours.
So I want to dismantle, I think, the idea of the sitting practice a little bit more. You've mentioned it's not necessarily about time and it's not necessarily about space. So can we push in on that a bit? How important is it to have to set aside a certain amount of time? How crucial is it to have a quiet space, especially if you're just starting up?
Yeah, so quiet space is quite critical. But maybe it starts off with time first. So if you establish yourself that you're going to sit for 7 a.m. for say 5 minutes. So you go to a space in the house and you tell your family, I'm going to be sitting there for 5 minutes at 7 a.m. So don't come and disturb me. So I think family members will just work around that, right? So I think it's about finding a study room or in a bedroom or in a living room even. And so I think my friend, for example, she would get her kids to meditate with her. So they are still and she can also sit still. Yeah, so they're like work around, right? And then in some ways also she's trying to introduce them to meditation, for example. And I think she finds it quite beneficial for her children. So yeah, so I mean, and also maybe sitting with a partner, your spouse, that could be helpful. Yeah, so I think if you can establish the time, then I think the space will be created somehow. People will give you that space.
And is it important to grow the time, start with 5, move on and, up it? Or is it perhaps more important to enrich the practice?
That's an interesting question. I think the short answer would be to just go with what you feel like doing. Mindfulness, the practice of it, is not meant to be like going through a concentration camp. But if you can just say maybe establish a minimum 5 minutes and then grow from there. Yeah, maybe establishing a minimum, like just 5 minutes. It doesn't have to be half an hour. But of course, for some people, they have been meditating for many years. Half an hour is okay for them. And that's what they feel they need. I think what's important is the routine. Every day, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. It's up to you. I do 20 minutes a day.
So in closing then, for the people who are listening, who are interested in trying this out, can you take us through how to begin structuring that or practicing that? Say, I want to start tomorrow morning. What advice would you have?
So Jon Kabat-Zinn, Jon Kabat-Zinn, he has been doing mindfulness practices every day. It's at 2 a.m. our time, but you can play back. So if you search for him on YouTube, Wisdom 2.0, you will find his practice every day, weekdays. So I think that's a great way, because he does a short practice, then he would take questions from the audience. So it's one way to kind of really get to know about mindfulness. And John, he introduced mindfulness in a secular, in a healthcare setting. So since the 70s, so he's an experienced meditator. And really an experienced mindfulness practitioner and great embodiment of mindfulness. Yeah, that I can suggest that. Another thing you mentioned, there are also a lot of apps out there, Headspace, Smiling Mind, Buddhify, and so forth. I mean, that's one way to track. I'm not so much of a techie person, and I actually prefer to put my gadget aside. But for some people, maybe that would be helpful. And there's something called a biofeedback, which actually measures your brain waves as you're meditating. That one's a bit expensive, so I mean, I think only those who are really serious about it will buy it on Amazon. But yeah, but that one I think is a great. I've tried it before, and I think it's really great in measuring your brain waves and knowing what sort of state of mind you are in.
Cool, Noelle. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
We've been speaking with Noelle Lim, who is, of course, a presenter and producer here at BFM and also a mindfulness teacher, on fostering a practice of mindfulness on this episode of Try This at Home, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.